In the name of one God, Holy Trinity. Amen. James and John, the sons of Zebedee. I love saying that, the sons of Zebedee. They came up to Jesus and they say, "Hey teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you." This is not a question or a request, not, "Hey teacher, would you do us a favor?" And I suppose if I were asked what entitlement sounded like, I might use this as an example. We want you to do for us whatever we ask of you. Notice they don't begin by coming out and saying what it is they want, but they sort of sidle up to Jesus first, kind of like saying, "Can I ask you a question?" rather than just asking the question. But anyway, they say, "We want you to do for us whatever we ask of you." And Jesus goes with it. He plays along. "What is it you want me to do?" he says. "Grant us to sit, one at your right hand and one at your left, in your glory," they say. And this is code for, "Elevate us to that place that is rightfully ours as your right hand and your left hand men." James and John want to be seen by Jesus and probably by others for who they think themselves to be. Top dogs, Jesus's henchmen. They make a bold demand. It's more than a little audacious. And in some ways, I kind of love it because it sounds so contemporary. And these days, we're encouraged to speak our truth, to say what it is we really want, to be authentic in our speech and our actions. Good things. James and John are being very real. They aren't afraid to tell Jesus what they really want. And even though they feel like they had to ease into it, their naked ambition is immediately revealed. No beating around the bush on that day. And I respect that. And apparently Jesus did too, because he doesn't rebuke them. Not really. He doesn't call them Satan and tell them to get behind him like he had done with Peter just almost right before this incident. He just kind of gently tells them that they don't know what it is they're asking. And if we only hear this short section from Mark's gospel as an isolated incident, we probably can't hear what it is that James and John couldn't hear either. This incident takes place as Jesus and his followers are on the road to Jerusalem, and we know the rest of the story. We know what happens. When they got to Jerusalem, it wasn't pretty. Jesus was tortured and executed, I would say murdered, by the men who were the political and spiritual powers of the day. And Jesus knew what was in store for him. He foresaw his own death. Here are the verses that immediately precede today's reading. He took the 12 aside again and began to tell them what was about to happen to him, saying, "See, we are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be handed over to the chief priests and the scribes, and they will condemn him to death. Then they will hand him over to the Gentiles. They will mock him and spit upon him and flog him and kill him. And after 3 days, he will rise again." So right after he had told them this, James and John demand that they be seated at Jesus' sides in his glory. What was it that they had missed? What was it that they hadn't heard, hadn't seen? Well, they latched on to Jesus' risen glory and completely skipped over his suffering. Isn't that human nature? I know it's my nature. Give me the good stuff, God. Let's skip the suffering. Nobody wants to go there. Not really. James and John didn't. I don't. But Jesus, in his wisdom, knows that neither he nor we get to skip the suffering on our way to glory. In other words, for glory today could be fulfillment, could be completion, could be joy. Jesus very gently asks them, are you able to drink the cup that I drink, or be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with? He's asking them, can you walk through the suffering that I am about to go through, a suffering even unto death? You want glory. Can you stand the suffering? Of course, they answered the question, are you able? With, yes, we are able. Of course they did. Don't we all think we're up to the task, ready to take on the burden of pain when it's theoretical? How bad could it be anyway? Well, Jesus assures them, it will be bad. The cup that I drink, you will drink, and with the baptism with which I am baptized, you will be baptized. And even though James and John did not know what they were asking, even before they asked, no, demanded that they get to glory, their suffering had already been promised to them. I hear compassion in his voice when Jesus tells him that he can't promise them glory, but he can promise them pain. It's just a fact of life. Now you may be sitting there thinking, geez, Brian, bummer. You know, I didn't come here to church today on this beautiful Sunday morning in October to hear about suffering. I came to hear about what you and Jimmy usually talk about God's love and about how we can spread it. And I'm here to say yes, yes, and. Here's the yes. This incredible world, these incredibly rich lives that God has made and given us as a gift, no strings attached, come straight from the love of God. All we need to do is accept these gifts. Yes. And here's the yes and. This is a world, these are our lives, where suffering and beauty come hand in hand. It's not either or, it's both and. Do you hear that today in today's strange little gospel reading? Not just one solitary disciple, but two brothers, James and John, the sons of Zebedee, come to Jesus wanting the glory, hold the suffering, and Jesus tells them, you don't get one without the other. Maybe you don't get this brilliant autumn day without the person you love suffering, surviving, or perhaps dying from a disease that you have no power to control. Maybe you don't get that October slant of golden light in the last of the remaining aspen leaves without your daughter having her heart broken, or you having your heart broken again. Maybe as you watch the children playing on the labyrinth in the sun, you're filled with so much love and you are in so much pain that you can barely stand it. I don't know. Maybe we're living on the cross and in the resurrection simultaneously all the time, but are only able to see one or the other because it's almost too much to bear. The thought that pain and joy are one. That may be grace. Those moments when we know that God's love is with us and in us, even when it looks like it's too much to bear. It makes no rational sense. I mean, this isn't something that we can reason our way into, and that's why it's so easy to reject out of hand that love and pain are intertwined. The idea that God doesn't just allow suffering, but that suffering and grace cannot be separated. Jesus couldn't or wouldn't separate them. He didn't promise James and John glory without a bitter cup, so I'm not going to promise it to you either. But I'm also not going to say that your suffering at the hands of others is ever justified, that anyone has the right to impose suffering on you, or that you have the right to impose suffering on anyone, or that you have to take it lying down. In fact, I believe the opposite is true. In the second half of today's gospel, Jesus warns his followers about how rulers and tyrants will take advantage of us, lord it over us, if we let them. We are responsible for alleviating the suffering that the powerful can and do inflict on us and on our brothers and sisters who are the most vulnerable, even as we suffer ourselves. Yes, and. So we stand in solidarity with our brothers and our sisters who are less fortunate than we, not because we are better or smarter or richer or more able to show them a better way. That's called lording it over them. We stand with those who are uninsured or underinsured, with those who work two jobs or three to survive in this valley so that they can cut our grass, build our homes, educate our children, patrol our streets, and can't afford to live here because they aren't paid a living wage. We stand with them because they are God's kids, just like we are. And when they suffer, we suffer too. We do this by serving them. What a concept. If you've ever been involved with Habitat for Humanity's Grove Project, and you all have as members of this church, St. John's received a turnkey award for all the hours that we've put in building those homes over at the Grove. By giving your financial support and your volunteer hours, or both, you know what it means to serve others. You've given, not out of a sense of obligation, but from that tender place in your heart where God lives, that place that is wounded by the world and longs for a better place for your brothers and sisters and their families, who are your families, to live. You have led this community of Jackson by serving, and Jesus would be proud. If you were at the dedication of the first 8 units at the Grove on Thursday evening, you know what I mean. It was a celebration of humility, and that's what made it so heartbreakingly beautiful. Who led the way? Well, I think the little children did, running and skipping and singing around their new homes. Who followed them? Their parents, who for the first time in most of their lives are now living in homes that won't be pulled out from under them. Who followed them? Well, the rest of us, who had the privilege of working together to help make this dream, which I believe is God's dream, happen. There were speeches of gratitude and thanks, and Jimmy and I got to say some prayers and splash some holy water around on the doors of the first 8 units at the Grove. And then we all stood around and ate some food provided by you. And then the sun went down behind High School Butte. It started to get cold, and the parking lot thinned out. I happened to drive by later that night at about 10 o'clock, and I caught a glimpse of lights on at the end, down at the end of that long driveway. So I turned around and pulled in, and I just sat there for a few minutes and watched them glow. Is there suffering in this world? Yes, and there is beauty. Is there breathtaking beauty and grace in this world? Yes. And there is pain. Would you have it any other way? Amen. Amen.